Sterling Publishing, in conjunction with Recorded Books, LLC, presents an unabridged recording of The Easy Way to Stop Smoking by Alan Carr. Read by Simon Preble. This book is copyrighted 1985, 1991, 1998, and 2004 by Alan Carr's Easy Way International Limited. We open this book with a foreword read by the author, Alan Carr.
This edition of Easy Way celebrates the 20th anniversary of the discovery of my method, which shows you just how easy and enjoyable it is to stop smoking. As I sit at my state-of-the-art laptop, it is difficult to believe that the original manuscript of this work was handwritten, barely legible, least of all to the writer, and then typed up on an ancient Underwood. When I extinguish my final cigarette on 15th July 1983, I knew for certain that I had discovered something that every smoker was searching for, an easy and immediate method to escape from nicotine slavery. What I didn't know for certain was whether I could convince a single smoker, let alone the world. Easy Way has exceeded all of my expectations. I am now widely recognized as the world's leading expert on stopping smoking. My book has sold around 6 million copies and has been translated into over 27 languages. In the UK, it has been a bestseller every year since its publication in 1987. It has also been a bestseller in Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, Japan, France, Spain, and the Republic of Ireland. However, the real satisfaction I get from my work is the knowledge that every day it helps thousands of smokers escape from the slavery of smoking. It all started with just my wife, Joyce, and myself at our home in London. Today we have a network of over 70 Easy Way clinics in 30 countries worldwide. My 30 years of chain smoking were a nightmare, and I am pleased to have this opportunity to thank my colleagues, my publishers, and the millions of ex-smokers who have quit with the help of Easy Way. They, combined with my freedom from the weed, have made the last 20 years seem like paradise. I hope that this edition of my little book will help to rescue millions of Americans from an addiction that has already claimed more lives than all the wars of history put together.
That was author Alan Carr. And now, The Easy Way to Stop Smoking.
Preface. At last, the miracle cure all smokers have been waiting for. Instantaneous, equally effective for the light or heavy smoker. No bad withdrawal pangs. No willpower required. No shock treatment. No aids or gimmicks required. No weight gain. Permanent. Perhaps you're somewhat apprehensive about listening to this book. Perhaps, like the majority of smokers, the mere thought of stopping fills you with panic. And although you have every intention of stopping one day, today is not that day. If you're expecting me to inform you of the terrible health risks that smokers run, the smokers spend a small fortune during their smoking lives, that it is a filthy, disgusting habit, and that you are a stupid, spineless, weak-willed jellyfish, then I must disappoint you. Those tactics never helped me to quit, and if they were going to help you, you would already have quit. My method, which I call Easy Way, doesn't work that way. You might find some of the things that I'm about to say difficult to believe. However, by the time you've finished this book, you'll not only believe them, but you'll also wonder how you could ever have been brainwashed into believing otherwise. There is a common misapprehension that we choose to smoke. Smokers no more choose to smoke than alcoholics choose to become alcoholics, or heroin addicts choose to become heroin addicts. It is true that we choose to light those first experimental cigarettes. I occasionally choose to go to the movies, but I certainly didn't choose to spend my whole life in a movie theatre. Please reflect on your life. Did you ever make the positive decision that at certain times in your life you couldn't enjoy a meal or a social occasion without smoking, or that you couldn't concentrate or handle stress without a cigarette? At what stage did you decide that you needed cigarettes, not just for social occasions, but permanently in your presence, and felt insecure, even panic-stricken, without them? Like every other smoker, you've been lured into the most sinister, subtle trap that man and nature have combined to devise. There is not a parent on this planet, whether smoker or non-smoker, who likes the thought of his or her children smoking. This means that all smokers wish they had never started. Not surprising, really. No one needs cigarettes to enjoy meals or cope with stress before he or she gets hooked. At the same time, all smokers wish to continue to smoke. After all, no one forces us to keep lighting up. Whether we understand the reason or not, it is only smokers themselves who decide to light up. If there were a magic button that smokers could press to wake up the following morning as if they had never lit that first cigarette, the only smokers who would remain tomorrow morning would be those who are still at the experimental stage. The only thing that prevents us from quitting is fear. Fear that we will have to survive an indeterminate period of misery, deprivation, and unsatisfied craving in order to be free. Fear that a meal or social occasion will never be quite as enjoyable without a cigarette. Fear that we will never be able to concentrate, handle stress, or be as confident without our little crutch. Fear that our personality and character will change. But most of all, the fear of once a smoker, always a smoker. That we will never be completely free and will spend the rest of our lives craving the occasional cigarette. If, as I did, you've already tried all the conventional ways to quit and have been through the misery of what I describe as the willpower method of stopping, you'll not only be affected by that fear, but you'll also be convinced you can never quit. If you're apprehensive, panic-stricken, or feel that the time is not right for you to give up, then let me assure you that your apprehension or panic is caused by fear. The fear is not relieved by cigarettes, but created by them. You didn't decide to fall into the nicotine trap, but like all traps, it's designed to ensure that you remain trapped. Ask yourself, when you lit those first experimental cigarettes, did you decide to remain a smoker as long as you have? So when are you going to quit? Tomorrow? Next year? Stop kidding yourself. The trap is designed to hold you for life. Why else do you think all those smokers don't quit before it kills them? This book was first published in 1985 and has appeared constantly on the bestseller lists since then. I now have almost 20 years' feedback, and as you'll soon see, the feedback has revealed information that has exceeded my wildest aspirations of the effectiveness of my method. It has also revealed two aspects of Easy Way that have caused me concern. The second I'll be covering later. The first arose from the letters that I've received. Here are three typical examples. I didn't believe the claims you made, and I apologize for doubting you. It was just as easy and enjoyable as you said it would be. I've given copies of your book to all my smoking friends and relatives, but I can't understand why they don't read it. I was given your book 8 years ago by an ex-smoking friend. I've just got around to reading it. My only regret is that I wasted 8 years. I've just finished reading Easy Way. I know it has only been 4 days, but I feel so great. I know I'll never need to smoke again. I first started to read your book 5 years ago, got halfway through and panicked. I knew that if I went on reading, I would have to stop. Wasn't I silly? No, that particular young woman wasn't silly. I've referred to a magic button. Easy Way works just like that magic button. Let me make it quite clear. Easy Way isn't magic, but for me and the hundreds of thousands of ex-smokers who have found it so easy and enjoyable to quit, it seems like magic. Every smoker wants to quit, and every smoker can find it easy and enjoyable to quit. It's only fear that prevents them from doing so. We have a chicken and egg situation. The greatest gain is to be rid of that fear. But you won't be free of that fear until you complete the book. On the contrary, like the woman in the third example, your fear might increase as you read the book, and it might prevent you from finishing it. You didn't decide to fall into the trap, but be clear in your mind, you won't escape from it unless you make a positive decision to do so. You might already be straining at the leash to quit. On the other hand, you might be apprehensive. Either way, please bear in mind, you have absolutely nothing to lose. If at the end of this book you decide that you wish to continue to smoke, there's nothing to prevent you from doing so. You don't even have to cut down or stop smoking while you're listening to this book. And remember, there is no shock treatment. On the contrary, I have only good news for you. Can you imagine how the Count of Monte Cristo felt when he finally escaped from that prison? That's how I felt when I escaped from the nicotine trap. That's how the millions of ex-smokers who have used my method feel. By the end of this book, that's how you will feel. Go for it. If you're a smoker, all you have to do is listen on. If you're a non-smoker buying this book for loved ones, all you have to do is persuade them to listen to it. If you can't persuade them, then listen to the book yourself, and the last chapter will advise you how to get the message across, and how to prevent your children from starting. Don't be fooled by the fact that your kids say they hate smoking now. All children do, before they become hooked. Introduction. I'm going to cure the world of smoking. One day I told my wife that I just smoked my last cigarette, and she thought I'd flipped. Her reaction was understandable if you consider that she'd watched me fail numerous attempts to quit. The most recent attempt had been 2 years previously. I'd actually survived 6 months of sheer purgatory before I finally succumbed and lit a cigarette. I'm not ashamed to admit that I cried like a baby. I was crying because I knew that I was condemned to be a smoker for life. I'd put so much effort into that attempt and suffered so much misery that I knew I would never have the strength to go through that ordeal again. I'm not a violent man, but if some patronizing non-smoker had been stupid enough at that moment to suggest to me that all smokers can find it easy to quit, immediately and permanently, I would not have been responsible for my actions. However, I'm convinced that any jury in the world, comprised of smokers only, would have pardoned me on the grounds of justifiable homicide. Perhaps you, too, find it impossible to believe that any smoker can find it easy to quit. If so, I beg you not to cast this book into the trash bin. Please trust me. I assure you that even you can find it easy to quit. Anyway, there I was, 2 years later, having just extinguished what I knew would be my final cigarette, not only telling my wife that I was already a non-smoker, but that I was going to cure the rest of the world. I must admit that at the time I found her skepticism somewhat irritating. However, in no way did it diminish my feeling of exultation. I suppose that my exhilaration in knowing that I was already a happy non-smoker distorted my perspective somewhat. With the benefit of hindsight, I can sympathize with her attitude. I now understand why my wife and my close friends and relatives thought I was a candidate for the funny farm. As I look back on my life, it seems that my whole existence has been a preparation for solving the smoking problem. Even those hateful years of training and practicing as an accountant were invaluable in helping me unravel the mysteries of the smoking trap. They say you can't fool all the people all of the time. But I believe the tobacco companies have done just that for years. I also believe that I'm the first to really understand the smoking trap. If I appear to be arrogant, let me hasten to add that it was no credit to me, just the circumstances of my life. The momentous day was July the 15th, 1983. It wasn't quite like Nelson Mandela finally leaving prison, but I imagine he felt the same sense of relief and exhilaration as I did when I extinguished that final cigarette. I realized I had discovered something that every smoker was praying for, an easy way to stop smoking. After testing out the method on smoking friends and relatives, I gave up accounting and became a full-time consultant, helping other smokers become free. My inspiration for the first edition of this book is a man I describe in Chapter 25. He visited me twice, and we were both reduced to tears on each occasion. He was so agitated that he couldn't relax enough to absorb what I was saying. I hoped that if I wrote it all down, he could read it in his own good time, as many times as he wanted to, and absorb the message. I had no doubt that Easy Way would work just as effectively for other smokers as it had for me. However, when I contemplated putting the method into book form, I was apprehensive. I did my own market research. The comments were not very encouraging. How can a book help me quit? What I need is willpower. How can a book avoid the terrible withdrawal pangs? In addition to these pessimistic comments, I had my own doubts. Often at the clinics, it became obvious that a client had misunderstood an important point that I was making. I was able to correct the situation, but how would a book be able to do that? I remembered well the frustrating times when I studied to qualify as an accountant, when I didn't understand or agree with a particular point in a book, and couldn't ask the book to explain. I was also well aware, particularly in these days of television and videos, that many people are not accustomed to reading. And I had one doubt that overrode all these other factors. I wasn't a writer, and was very conscious of my limitations in this respect. I was confident that I could sit down face to face with a smoker and convince that smoker how much more enjoyable social occasions would be, how he or she would be better able to concentrate and handle stress as a non-smoker, and just how easy and enjoyable the process of quitting could be. But could I transfer that facility to a book? I even doubted whether I had the right to put Easy Way into book form, and wondered whether I should have employed a professional writer. In no way was I certain that it would be a success. Thankfully, the gods were kind to me. I've received thousands of complimentary letters containing comments such as, "It's the greatest book ever written." "You are my guru." "You are a genius." "You should be knighted." "You should be prime minister." "You are a saint." I hope that I've not allowed such comments to go to my head. I'm fully aware that those comments were made not to compliment me on my literary skills, but in spite of my lack of them. They were made because whether your preference is to listen to a book, or to read a book, or to attend a clinic, the Easy Way system works. Not only do we now have a worldwide network of Easy Way clinics, but this book has also been translated into more than 20 languages, and it features constantly on the non-fiction bestsellers lists across Europe. After approximately a year of running smoking clinics, I thought I had learned everything that was possible to learn about helping smokers quit. Amazingly, almost 20 years after discovering the method, I still learn something new practically every day. This fact caused me some concern when I was asked to revise the first edition after 6 years of publication. I feared that practically everything I had written would have to be amended or retracted. I needn't have worried. The basic principles of Easy Way are as sound today as when I first discovered the method. The beautiful truth is, it's easy to stop. That is a fact. My only difficulty is to convince every smoker of that fact. All of the knowledge that I've accumulated over the course of 20 years has helped enable every smoker to see the light. At our clinics, we try to achieve perfection. Every failure hurts us deeply because we know every smoker can find it easy to quit. When smokers fail, they tend to regard it as their failure. We regard it as our failure. We fail to convince those smokers just how easy and enjoyable it is to quit. I dedicated the first edition to the smokers that I had failed to cure. That failure rate was based on the money-back guarantee that we give at our clinics. The average current failure rate of our clinics worldwide is under 10%. That means a success rate of over 90%. Today we have a network of more than 50 EasyWay clinics in 20 countries worldwide, in cities as diverse as New York City, Milan, London, Chicago, Toronto, Cape Town, Paris, and Madrid. My clinics have successfully operated for 20 years. Smokers arrive at my clinics in differing states of panic, convinced they won't succeed in stopping, and believing that even if they do stop, they'll have to endure a terrible period of abject misery, that social occasions will never be quite so enjoyable, that they'll be less able to concentrate and cope with stress, and that although they might never smoke again, they will never be completely free. And for the rest of their lives, they will have occasional yearnings for cigarettes and will have to resist the temptation. The majority of those smokers leave the clinics a few hours later, already happy non-smokers. How did we achieve that miracle? You need to book an appointment at your nearest EasyWay clinic to find out. The clinics enjoy such a high success rate that we're able to give a money-back guarantee. The fee varies according to location, and if you belong to the 20% who require more than one visit, you can attend any number of follow-ups without further charge. We never give up on any smoker. And if you decide, having attended 3 sessions within 3 months without cancellation, that you no longer wish to stop, your fee will be refunded in full. On the basis of our money-back guarantee, the worldwide success rate at our clinics averages over 90%. Don't be mistaken. The success of the clinics should not detract from the value of this book, which in itself has enabled millions of smokers to stop. If you're in doubt, why not telephone your nearest EasyWay clinic for further guidance? A list of clinics appears at the end of the book. Although I was aware that I discovered something marvelous, I never in my wildest dreams expected to achieve such rates. You might well argue that if I genuinely believed that I would cure the world of smoking, I must have expected to achieve 100%. No, I never ever expected to achieve 100%. Snuff-taking was the previous most popular form of nicotine addiction until it became antisocial. However, there are still a few weirdos who continue to take snuff, and probably there always will be. Amazingly, Britain's Houses of Parliament are one of the last bastions of snuff-taking. I suppose this is not so surprising when you think about it. Politicians are generally about 100 years behind the times. So there will always be a few weirdos that will continue to smoke. I certainly never expected to cure every smoker personally. I naively thought that the rest of the world would also see the light and adopt my method once I had explained the mysteries of the smoking trap and dispelled such illusions as smokers enjoy smoking, smokers choose to smoke, smoking relieves boredom and stress, smoking aids concentration and relaxation, smoking is a habit, it takes willpower to quit. Once a smoker, always a smoker. Telling smokers that it kills them helps them to quit. Substitutes, particularly nicotine replacement, help smokers quit. Smokers have to go through a transitional period of misery in order to quit. I thought my chief antagonist would be the tobacco industry. Amazingly, my chief stumbling blocks were the very institutions I assumed would be my greatest allies. The media, the government, organizations like the American Cancer Society, and the established medical profession. The movie Sister Kenny, 1946, about infantile paralysis, or polio, illustrates exactly the attitude I encountered. I vividly remember that the word polio engendered the same fear in me then as the word cancer does now. Polio not only paralyzed the legs and arms, but also distorted the limbs. The established medical treatment was to put affected limbs in irons and thus prevent the distortion. The result was paralysis for life. Sister Kenny believed that the irons inhibited recovery and proved 1,000 times over that the muscles could be re-educated so that the child could walk again. However, Sister Kenny wasn't a doctor. She was merely a nurse. How dare she dabble in a province that was confined to qualified doctors? It didn't seem to matter that Sister Kenny had found the solution to the problem and had proved her solution to be effective. The children Sister Kenny treated knew she was right, as did their parents. Yet the established medical profession not only refused to adopt her methods, it actually prevented her from practicing. It took 20 years before the medical profession would accept what Sister Kenny saw as obvious. I first saw that film years before I discovered Easy Way. No doubt there was an element of truth in it. However, it seemed obvious to me that Hollywood had used a large portion of poetic license. Sister Kenny couldn't possibly have discovered something that the combined knowledge of medical science had failed to discover. Surely the established medical specialists weren't the dinosaurs they appeared to be in the film. How could it possibly have taken them 20 years to accept the evidence that was staring them in the face? They say that fact is stranger than fiction. I apologize for accusing the makers of Sister Kenny of using poetic license. Even in this so-called enlightened age of modern communication, after 20 years, I've failed to get my message across. Oh, I've proved my point. You're probably listening to this book because another ex-smoker has recommended it to you. Remember, I don't have the massive financial power of institutions like the American Medical Association or the American Lung Association. Like Sister Kenny, I'm a lone individual. Like her, I'm only famous because my system works. I'm already regarded as the number one guru helping smokers to quit. Like Sister Kenny, I've proved my point. But what good did it do Sister Kenny if the rest of the world was still adopting procedures completely counterproductive to recovery from polio? As I wrote at the end of the original manuscript, there is a wind of change in society. A snowball has started that I hope this book will turn into an avalanche. From my remarks above, you might have drawn the conclusion that I don't respect the medical profession. Nothing could be further from the truth. One of my sons is a doctor, and I know of no finer profession. Indeed, we receive more recommendations to our clinics from doctors than from any other source, and surprisingly, more of our clients come from the medical profession than any other single profession. In the early years, doctors generally regarded me as being somewhere between a charlatan and a quack. In August 1997, I had the great privilege to be invited to lecture to the 10th World Conference on Tobacco or Health, held in Beijing. I believe that I'm the first non-physician to receive such an honor. The invitation itself is a measure of the progress that I've made. However, I might just as well have been lecturing to a brick wall. Since nicotine gum and the patch have failed to cure the problem, smokers themselves appear to have accepted that drug addiction can't be cured by prescribing the same drug. It's equivalent to telling a heroin addict, "Don't smoke heroin. Smoking it is dangerous. Try injecting it into your vein." "Don't try this with nicotine. It will kill you instantly." The medical profession and the media haven't a clue about helping smokers quit. They concentrate on telling smokers what they already know. Smoking is unhealthy, it's filthy and disgusting, it's antisocial and expensive. It never seems to occur to them that smokers do not smoke because they don't understand the reasons that they shouldn't smoke. The real solution is to remove the reasons why they do smoke. On National No Smoking Days, the medical experts say something like, "This is the day that every smoker tries to quit." Every smoker knows that it's the one day in the year that most smokers will smoke twice as many cigarettes as they usually do, and twice as blatantly. Smokers don't like being told what to do, particularly by people who don't understand why they smoke, and dismiss smokers as mere idiots. Medical experts who don't completely understand smokers themselves, or how to make it easy for smokers to quit, suggest, try this method. If it doesn't work, try another. Imagine 10 different ways of treating appendicitis. 9 methods cured 10% of the patients and killed 90%. And the 10th method cured 95%. Imagine that knowledge of the 10th method had been available for more than 20 years, but the vast majority of the medical profession still recommended the other 9. One of the doctors at the Beijing conference raised a pertinent point that hadn't occurred to me. He said the doctors might well find themselves liable to a legal action for malpractice by not advising their patients of the best way to quit smoking. Ironically, he was a great advocate of nicotine replacement therapy, nicotine gums, patches, etc. I try hard not to be vindictive, but I hope he becomes the first victim of his suggestion. The British government has wasted millions of pounds on shock TV campaigns trying to persuade younger people not to get hooked. It might just as well have wasted the money trying to persuade them that motorbikes can kill. Youngsters know that one cigarette won't kill them. No one ever expects to get hooked. The link between smoking and lung cancer has been established for more than 50 years. Yet more kids are becoming hooked nowadays than ever before. Kids don't need to watch smoking horrors on TV to witness the actual devastation that smoking causes. I watched my father and my sister destroyed by the weed, but that didn't prevent me from falling into the trap. I appeared on a national TV show with a doctor from the European Medical Association on smoking or health, who had never smoked in her life, nor cured a single smoker, yet categorically informed the nation about how the association's campaign would prevent youngsters from becoming hooked. If only the government had had the common sense to give those millions of pounds to me, I could have financed a campaign that would have guaranteed the death of nicotine addiction within a few years. I truly believe that the snowball has become the size of a soccer ball. But after 20 years, that is still a spit in the ocean. I'm grateful to the thousands of ex-smokers who have visited my clinics, read my books, watched my videos, and recommended Easy Way to friends, relatives, and anyone who will listen. And I pray that you continue to do so. However, the snowball won't become an avalanche until the medical profession and the media stop recommending methods that make it harder to quit and accept that Easy Way is not just another method, but the only sensible method to use. I don't expect you to believe me at this stage, but by the time you've finished this book, you will understand. Even the comparatively few smokers we have failed say something like, "I haven't succeeded yet, but your way is better than any I know." If when you finish this book, you feel that you owe me a debt of gratitude, you can more than repay that debt, not just by recommending Easy Way to your friends, but whenever you see a TV or radio show or read a newspaper article advocating some other method, by writing to or calling them to ask why they aren't advocating Easy Way. That will start the avalanche, and if I live to witness it, I will die a happy man. This new edition of Easy Way gives you the state-of-the-art technology on just how easy and enjoyable it is to quit smoking. Do you have a feeling of doom and gloom? Forget it. I've achieved some marvelous things in my life. By far the greatest was to escape from the slavery of nicotine addiction. I escaped more than 20 years ago and still cannot get over the joy of being free. There is no need to feel depressed. Nothing bad is happening. On the contrary, you're about to achieve something that every smoker on the planet would love to achieve. To be free. Chapter 1. The worst nicotine addict I have yet to meet. Perhaps I should begin by describing my credentials for writing this book. I'm not a doctor or a psychiatrist. My qualifications are far more appropriate. I spent 33 years of my life as a confirmed smoker. In the latter years, I smoked 100 a day on a bad day, and never fewer than 60. I made dozens of attempts to stop. I once quit for 6 months, and I was still climbing up the wall, still standing near smokers trying to get a whiff of the tobacco, still travelling in the smokers' cars on trains. With most smokers, on the health side, it's a question of, I'll stop before it happens to me. I had reached the stage where I knew it was killing me. I had a permanent headache from the pressure of the constant coughing. I could feel the continuous throbbing in the vein that runs vertically down the centre of my forehead. And I honestly believed that any moment there would be an explosion in my head and I would die from a brain hemorrhage. It bothered me, but it still didn't stop me. I had reached the stage where I gave up even trying to stop. It was not so much that I enjoyed smoking. Sometime in their lives, most smokers suffer from the illusion that they enjoy the odd cigarette, but I never suffered from that illusion. I've always detested the taste and smell. But I thought a cigarette helped me to relax. It gave me courage and confidence, and I was always miserable when I tried to stop, never being able to visualize an enjoyable life without a cigarette. Eventually, my wife sent me to a hypnotherapist. I must confess that I was completely skeptical, knowing nothing about hypnosis in those days, and having visions of a Svengali-type figure with piercing eyes and a waving pendulum. I had all the normal illusions that smokers have about smoking, except one. I knew that I wasn't a weak-willed person. I was in control of all other aspects of my life, but cigarettes controlled me. I thought that hypnosis involved the forcing of wills, and although I was not obstructive, like most smokers, I dearly wanted to stop, I thought no one was going to kid me that I didn't need to smoke. The whole session appeared to be a waste of time. The hypnotherapist tried to make me lift my arms and do various other things. Nothing appeared to be working properly. I didn't lose consciousness. I didn't go into a trance, or at least I didn't think I did. And yet after that session, not only did I stop smoking, but I actually enjoyed the process even during the withdrawal period. Now, before you go rushing off to see a hypnotherapist, let me make something quite clear. Hypnotherapy is a means of communication. If the wrong message is communicated, you won't stop smoking. I'm loath to criticize the man whom I consulted, because I would be dead by now if I hadn't seen him. But it was in spite of him, not because of him. Neither do I wish to appear to be knocking hypnotherapy. On the contrary, I use it as part of my own consultations. It is the power of suggestion, and a powerful force that can be used for good or evil. Don't ever consult a hypnotherapist unless he or she has been personally recommended by someone you respect and trust. During those awful years as a smoker, I thought that my life depended on cigarettes, and I was prepared to die rather than be without them. Today, people ask me whether I ever have the odd pang. The answer is, never. 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 Just the reverse. I've had a wonderful life. If I had died from smoking, I couldn't have complained. I've been a very lucky man. But the most marvellous thing that has ever happened to me is being freed from that nightmare, that slavery of having to go through life systematically destroying my own body and paying through the nose for the privilege. I'm not a mystical figure. I don't believe in magicians or fairies. I have a scientific brain, and I couldn't understand what appeared to me like magic. I started reading up on hypnosis and on smoking. Nothing I read seemed to explain the miracle that had happened. Why had it been so ridiculously easy to stop, whereas previously it had been weeks of black depression? It took me a long time to work it all out, basically because I was going about it back to front. I was trying to work out why it had been so easy to stop, whereas the real problem is trying to explain why smokers find it difficult to stop. Smokers talk about the terrible withdrawal pangs, but when I looked back and tried to remember those awful pangs, they didn't exist for me. There was no physical pain. It was all in the mind. Now, my full-time profession is helping other people to kick the habit. I am very, very successful. I've helped to cure thousands of smokers. Let me emphasize from the start, there is no such thing as a confirmed smoker. I've still not met anybody who was as badly hooked, or rather thought he was as badly hooked, as I was. It's basically fear that keeps us smoking. The fear that life will never be quite as enjoyable without cigarettes, and the fear of feeling deprived. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. Not only is life just as enjoyable without them, but also infinitely more so in many ways. And extra health, energy and wealth are the least of the advantages. All smokers can find it easy to stop smoking, even you. All you have to do is listen to the rest of this book with an open mind. The more you can understand, the easier you will find it to stop. Even if you don't understand a word, provided you follow the instructions, you'll find stopping easy. Most important of all, you'll not go through life moping for cigarettes or feeling deprived. The only mystery will be why you smoked for so long. Let me issue a warning. There are only two reasons for failure with my method. One, failure to carry out instructions. Some people find it annoying that I'm so dogmatic about certain recommendations. For example, I will tell you not to try cutting down or using substitutes like sweets or chewing gum, particularly anything containing nicotine. The reason why I'm so dogmatic is that I know my subject. I do not deny that there are many people who have succeeded in stopping by using such ruses, but they've succeeded in spite of, not because of them. There are people who can make love standing on a hammock, but it is not the easiest way. Everything I tell you has a purpose, to make it easy to stop and thereby ensure success. And two, failure to understand. Do not take anything for granted. Question not only what I tell you, but also your own views and what society has taught you about smoking. For example, those of you who think it just a habit, ask yourself why other habits, some of them enjoyable ones, are easy to break. Yet a habit that tastes awful, costs us a fortune, and kills us, is so difficult to break. If you think you enjoy a cigarette, ask yourself why other things in life that are infinitely more enjoyable you can take or leave. Why do you have the cigarette? And why does panic set in if you don't? Chapter 2. The Easy Method. The object of this book is to get you into the frame of mind in which, instead of feeling like you're climbing Mount Everest and spending the next few weeks craving a cigarette and envying other smokers, you start right away with a feeling of elation, as if you had been cured of a terrible disease. From then on, the further you go through life, the more you will look at cigarettes and wonder how you ever smoked them in the first place. You will look at smokers with pity as opposed to envy. Provided that you are not a non-smoker or an ex-smoker, it is essential to keep smoking until you finish the book completely. This may appear to be a contradiction. Later I'll explain that cigarettes do absolutely nothing for you at all. In fact, one of the many conundrums about smoking is that when we're actually smoking a cigarette, we look at it and wonder why we're doing it. It is only when we are deprived that the cigarette becomes precious. However, let us accept that, whether you like it or not, you believe you're hooked. When you believe you're hooked, you can never be completely relaxed or concentrate properly unless you're smoking. So don't attempt to stop smoking before you've finished the whole book. As you listen further, your desire to smoke will gradually be reduced. Don't go off half-cocked. This could be fatal. Remember, all you have to do is follow the instructions. With the benefit of almost 20 years' feedback since the book's original publication, this instruction to continue to smoke until you have completed the book has caused me more frustration than any other. When I first stopped smoking, many of my relatives and friends stopped, purely because I had done it. They thought, if he can do it, anybody can. Over the years, by dropping little hints, I managed to persuade the ones that hadn't stopped to realize just how nice it is to be free. When the book was first printed, I gave copies to the hardcore who were still puffing away. I worked on the basis that even if it were the most boring book ever written, they would still read it, if only because it had been written by a friend. I was surprised and hurt to learn that, months later, they hadn't bothered to finish the book. I even discovered that someone who was then my closest friend had not only ignored the original copy I had signed and given to him, but had actually given it away. I was hurt at the time, but I'd overlooked the dreadful fear that slavery to the weed instills in the smoker. It can transcend friendship. It nearly provoked a divorce because of it. My mother once said to my wife, "Why don't you threaten to leave him if he doesn't stop smoking?" My wife said, "Because he'd leave me if I did." I'm ashamed to admit it, but I believe she was right. Such is the fear that smoking creates. I now realize that many smokers don't finish the book because they feel they've got to stop smoking when they do. Some deliberately read only one line a day in order to postpone the evil day. Now, I'm fully aware that many readers are having their arms twisted by people who love them to listen to this book. Look at it this way. What have you got to lose? If you don't stop at the end of the book, you are no worse off than you are now. You have absolutely nothing to lose and so much to gain. Incidentally, if you've not smoked for a few days or weeks, but are not sure whether you're a smoker, an ex-smoker, or a non-smoker, then don't smoke while you listen. In fact, you are already a non-smoker. All we've got to do is to let your brain catch up with your body. By the end of the book, you'll be a happy non-smoker. Basically, my method is the complete opposite of the normal method of trying to stop. The normal method is to list the considerable disadvantages of smoking and say, if only I can go long enough without a cigarette, eventually the desire to smoke will go. I can then enjoy life again, free of slavery to the weed. This is the logical way to go about it, and thousands of smokers are stopping every day using variations of this method. However, it is very difficult to succeed using this method for the following reasons. One, stopping smoking is not the real problem. Every time you put a cigarette out, you stop smoking. You may have powerful reasons on day one to say, "I don't want to smoke anymore." All smokers have, every day of their lives, and the reasons are more powerful than you can possibly imagine. The real problem is day two, day 10, or day 10,000, when in a weak moment, an inebriated moment, or even a strong moment, you have one cigarette, and then you want another. And suddenly, you're a smoker again. Two, the health scares should stop us. Our rational minds say, stop doing it, you're a fool. But in fact, the health scares make it harder. We smoke, for example, when we're nervous. Tell smokers that cigarettes are killing them, and the first thing they will do is light one. There are more cigarette butts outside the Royal Marsden Hospital, England's foremost cancer treatment establishment, than outside any other hospital in the country. 3. All reasons for stopping actually make it harder for two other reasons. First, they create a sense of sacrifice. We're always being forced to give up our little friend or prop or vice or pleasure, whichever way the smoker sees it. Secondly, they create a blind. We don't smoke because we don't understand the reasons we should stop. The real question is, why do we want or need to do it? The easy method is basically this. Initially, to forget the reasons we'd like to stop, to face the cigarette problem and to ask ourselves the following questions. 1. What is it doing for me? 2. Do I actually enjoy it? And 3. Do I really need to go through life paying through the nose just to stick these things in my mouth and suffocate myself? The beautiful truth is that it does absolutely nothing for you at all. Let me make it quite clear. I don't mean that the disadvantages of being a smoker outweigh the advantages. All smokers know that all their lives. I mean there are not any advantages from smoking. The only advantage it ever had was the social plus. Nowadays, even smokers themselves regard it as an antisocial habit. Most smokers find it necessary to rationalize why they smoke. But the reasons are all fallacies and illusions. The first thing we're going to do is to remove these fallacies and illusions. In fact, you'll realize that there is nothing to give up. Not only is there nothing to give up, but there are also marvelous positive gains from being a non-smoker. And health and money are only two of these. Once the illusion that life will never be quite as enjoyable without the cigarette is removed, once you realize that not only is life just as enjoyable without it, but infinitely more so, once the feeling of being deprived or of missing out is eradicated, then we can go back to reconsider the health and money and the dozens of other reasons for stopping smoking. These realizations will become positive additional aids to help you achieve what you really desire, to enjoy the whole of your life free from the slavery of the weed.
Chapter 3. Why is it difficult to stop? As I explained earlier, I got interested in this subject because of my own addiction. When I finally stopped, it was like magic. When I previously tried to stop, there were weeks of black depression. There would be odd days when I was comparatively cheerful, but the next day, I was depressed again. It was like clawing your way out of a slippery pit. You feel you're near the top, you see the sunshine, and then find yourself sliding down again. Eventually, you light that cigarette. It tastes awful, and you try to work out why you have to do it. One of the questions I always ask smokers prior to my consultations is, do you want to stop smoking? In a way, it's a stupid question. All smokers would love to stop smoking. If you say to the most confirmed smoker, if you could go back in time before you became hooked, with the knowledge you have now, would you have started smoking? No way, is the reply. Say to the most confirmed smoker, someone who doesn't think that it injures his health, who's not worried about the social stigma, and who can afford it. There are not many about these days. Do you encourage your children to smoke? No way, is the reply. All smokers feel that something evil has got possession of them. In the early days, it's a matter of, I'm going to stop, not today, but tomorrow. Eventually, we get to the stage where we think either that we haven't got the willpower, or that there is something inherent to the cigarette that we must have in order to enjoy life. As I said previously, the problem is not explaining why it's easy to stop. It's explaining why it is difficult. In fact, the real problem is explaining why anybody does it in the first place, or why at one time more than 60% of the population in Britain was smoking. The whole business of smoking is an extraordinary enigma. The only reason we get onto it is because thousands of people are already doing it. Yet every one of them wishes he or she had not started in the first place, telling us that it's a waste of time and money. We can't quite believe that they're not enjoying it. We associate it with being grown up and work hard to become hooked ourselves. We then spend the rest of our lives telling our own children not to do it and trying to kick the habit ourselves. We also spend the rest of our lives paying through the nose. the average 20-a-day smoker spends $100,000 or more in his or her lifetime on cigarettes. What do we do with that money? It wouldn't be so bad if we just set light to it. We actually use it systematically to congest our lungs with cancerous tars, progressively to clutter up and poison our blood vessels. Each day, we are increasingly starving every muscle and organ of oxygen, so that each day we become more lethargic. We sentence ourselves to a lifetime of filth, bad breath, stained teeth, burnt clothes, filthy ashtrays, and the foul smell of stale tobacco. It is a lifetime of slavery. We spend half our lives in situations in which society forbids us to smoke. Churches, hospitals, schools, trains, theatres and the like. Or when we're trying to cut down or stop, feeling deprived. The rest of our smoking lives is spent in situations where we are allowed to smoke, but wish we didn't have to. What sort of hobby is it that when you're doing it, you wish you weren't? And when you're not doing it, you crave it. It's a lifetime of being treated by half of society like some sort of leper, and worst of all, a lifetime of an otherwise intelligent, rational human being going through life in self-contempt. The smoker despises himself every National Non-Smoking Day, every time he inadvertently reads the government health warning, or there's a cancer scare or a bad breath campaign, every time he gets congested or has a pain in the chest, every time he is the lone smoker in company with non-smokers. Having to go through life with these awful black shadows at the back of his mind, what does he get out of it? Absolutely nothing. Pleasure? Enjoyment? Relaxation? A prop? A boost? All illusions. Unless you consider the wearing of tight shoes to enjoy the removal of them as some sort of pleasure. As I've said, the real problem is trying to explain not only why smokers find it difficult to stop, but why anybody smokes at all. You're probably saying, well, that's all very well. I know this, but once you're hooked on these things, it's very difficult to stop. But why is it so difficult? And why do we have to do it? Smokers search for the answer to these questions all of their lives. Some say it's because of the powerful withdrawal symptoms. In fact, the actual withdrawal symptoms from nicotine are so mild, as you'll hear in Chapter 6, that most smokers have lived and died without ever realizing they're drug addicts. Some say cigarettes are very enjoyable. They aren't. They are filthy, disgusting objects. Ask any smoker who thinks he smokes only because he enjoys a cigarette if, when he hasn't got his own brand and can only obtain a brand he finds distasteful, he stops smoking. Smokers would rather smoke old rope than not smoke at all. Enjoyment has nothing to do with it. I enjoy lobster, but I never got to the stage where I had to have 20 lobsters hanging round my neck. With other things in life, we enjoy them while we're doing them, but we don't sit feeling deprived when we're not. Some search for deep psychological reasons, the Freudian syndrome, the child at the mother's breast. Really, it's just the reverse. The usual reason we start smoking is to show we're grown up and mature. If we had to suck a pacifier in public, we would die of embarrassment. Some think the appeal is the reverse, the macho effect of breathing smoke or fire down your nostrils. Again, this argument has no substance. A burning cigarette in the ear would appear ridiculous. How much more ridiculous to breathe cancer-triggering tars into your lungs? Some say it's something to do with my hands. So why light it? It's oral satisfaction. So why light it? It's the feeling of the smoke going into my lungs. An awful feeling. It's called suffocation. Many believe smoking relieves boredom. This is also a fallacy. Boredom is a frame of mind. There is nothing interesting about a cigarette. For 33 years, my reason was that it relaxed me, gave me confidence and courage. I also knew it was killing me and costing me a fortune. Why didn't I go to my doctor and ask him for an alternative to relax me and give me courage and confidence? I didn't go because I knew he would suggest an alternative. It wasn't my reason. It was my excuse. Some say they only do it because their friends do it. Are they really that stupid? If so, they should pray that their friends don't start cutting their heads off to cure a headache. Most smokers who think about it eventually come to the conclusion that it's just a habit. This is not really an explanation, but once all the usual rational explanations have been discounted, it appears to be the only remaining excuse. Unfortunately, this explanation is equally illogical. Every day of our lives we change habits, and some of them are very enjoyable. We've been brainwashed into believing that smoking is a habit, and that habits are difficult to break. Are habits difficult to break? In the United Kingdom, we're in the habit of driving on the left side of the road. Yet when we drive on the European continent or in the United States, we immediately break that habit with hardly any aggravation whatsoever. It's clearly a fallacy that habits are hard to break. The fact is, we make and break habits every day of our lives. So why do we find it difficult to break a habit that tastes awful, that kills us, that costs us a fortune, that is filthy and disgusting, and that we would love to break anyway, when all we have to do is to stop doing it? The answer is that smoking is not habit. It is nicotine addiction. Most smokers find it difficult to give up smoking because they don't understand drug addiction. Their main reason is that they're convinced they get some genuine pleasure and or crutch from smoking, and believe that they're making a genuine sacrifice if they quit. The beautiful truth is that once you understand nicotine addiction and the true reasons why you smoke, you'll stop doing it, just like that. And within 3 weeks, the only mystery will be why you found it necessary to smoke as long as you did, and why you cannot persuade other smokers how nice it is to be a non-smoker. Chapter 4. The Sinister Trap. Smoking is the most subtle, sinister trap that man and nature have combined to devise. What gets us into it in the first place? The thousands of adults who are already doing it. They even warn us that it's a filthy, disgusting habit that will eventually destroy us and cost us a fortune. But we can't believe that they're not enjoying it. One of the many pathetic aspects of smoking is how hard we have to work in order to become hooked. It's the only trap in nature that has no lure, no piece of cheese. The thing that springs the trap is not that cigarettes taste so good, it's that they taste so awful. If that first cigarette tasted good, alarm bells would ring, and as intelligent human beings, we could then understand why half the adult population was systematically paying through the nose to poison itself. But because that first cigarette tastes awful, our young minds are reassured that we will never become hooked, and we think that because we're not enjoying cigarettes, we can stop whenever we want to. It is the only drug in nature that prevents you from achieving your aim. Boys usually start because they want to appear tough, like Humphrey Bogart or Clint Eastwood. The last thing you feel with the first cigarette is tough. You dare not inhale, and if you have too many, you start to feel dizzy, then sick. All you want to do is get away from the others and throw the filthy things away. With women, the aim is often to be sophisticated and modern. We've all seen them taking little puffs on a cigarette, looking absolutely ridiculous. By the time the boys have learned to look tough and the girls have learned to look sophisticated, they wish they had never started in the first place. I wonder whether women ever look sophisticated when they smoke, or whether this is a figment of our imaginations created by cigarette advertisements. It seems to me that there's no intermediary stage between the obvious learner and the veteran smoker. We then spend the rest of our lives trying to explain to ourselves why we do it, telling our children not to get caught, and at odd times, trying to escape ourselves. The trap is so designed that we try to stop only when we've stress in our lives, whether it be health, shortage of money, or just plain being made to feel like a leper. As soon as we stop, we have more stress. The fearful withdrawal pangs of nicotine, and the things that we rely on to relieve stress, our old prop, the cigarette, we must now do without. After a few days of torture, we decide that we've picked the wrong time. We must wait for a period without stress, and as soon as that arrives, the reason for stopping vanishes. Of course, that period will never arrive because, in the first place, we think that our lives tend to become more and more stressful. As we leave the protection of our parents, the natural process is setting up homes, paying mortgages, having babies, working more responsible jobs, and so forth. This is also an illusion. The truth is that the most stressful periods for any creature are early childhood and adolescence. We tend to confuse responsibility with stress. Smokers' lives automatically become more stressful because tobacco does not relax you or relieve stress as society leads us to believe. Just the reverse. It actually causes you to become more nervous and stressed. Even those smokers who kick the habit, most do, one or more times during their lives, can lead perfectly happy lives, yet suddenly become hooked again. The whole business of smoking is like wandering into a giant maze. As soon as we enter the maze, our minds become misty and clouded, and we spend the rest of our lives trying to escape. Many of us eventually do, only to find that we get trapped again at a later date. I spent 33 years trying to escape from that maze. Like all smokers, I couldn't understand it. However, due to a combination of unusual circumstances, none of which reflect any credit on me, I wanted to know why previously it had been so desperately difficult to stop. And yet, when I finally did, it was not only easy, but enjoyable. Since stopping smoking, my hobby, and later my profession, has been to resolve the many conundrums associated with smoking. It's a complex and fascinating puzzle, and like the Rubik's Cube, practically impossible to solve. However, like all complicated puzzles, if you know the solution, it's easy. I have the solution to stopping smoking easily. I will lead you out of the maze and ensure that you'll never wander into it again. All you have to do is follow the instructions. If you take a wrong turn, the rest of the instructions will be pointless. Let me emphasize that anybody can find it easy to stop smoking, but first we need to establish the facts. No, I don't mean the scary facts. I know you're already aware of them. There's already enough information on the evils of smoking. If that were going to stop you, you would already have stopped. I mean, why do we find it difficult to stop? In order to answer this question, we need to know the real reason why we're still smoking. Chapter 5. Why do we carry on smoking? We all start smoking for stupid reasons, usually social pressures or social occasions. Yet once we feel we're becoming hooked, why do we carry on smoking? No regular smoker knows why he or she smokes. If smokers knew the true reason, they would stop doing it. I've asked the question of thousands of smokers during my consultations. The true answer is the same for all smokers, but the variety of replies is infinite. I find this part of the consultation the most amusing, and at the same time, the most pathetic. All smokers know in their heart of hearts that they're fools. They know that they had no need to smoke before they became hooked. Most of them can remember that their first cigarette tasted awful, and that they had to work hard in order to become hooked. The most annoying part is that they sense that non-smokers are not missing anything, and are laughing at them. However, smokers are intelligent, rational human beings. They know that they're taking enormous health risks and that they spend a fortune on cigarettes in their lifetime. Therefore, it's necessary for them to have a rational explanation to justify their habit. The actual reason why smokers continue to smoke is a subtle combination of the factors that I will elaborate on in the next two chapters. They are, 1, nicotine addiction, 2, brainwashing.